Welcome back, Murder Friends 2.
Under the Influence of True Crime, that's Kate, and she's still telling our story.
And that's Em, and they're still not under the influence because we're doing part 2 in rapid succession. So
Correct.
So for you guys, it's a little delayed, but for us, it's not.
It was 12 seconds ago.
So, you know, surprise. That's how the man behind the curtain, if you will.
Breaking the fourth wall currently.
Yeah, so which obviously means that there's still no news because, as aforementioned, 12 seconds ago, unless you guys want to know that my cat came and went in also 12 seconds. Anyway, so since there's no new news. We're going to just jump right back into that horrible, horrible case. If you don't mind, I'm going to repeat my trigger warning from last week.
Yes.
If you weren't here, I would say you can go back. Well, I mean, you can go back and listen if that's not your prerogative. And, you know, this just isn't the case for you. No shame in that either. But the trigger warning is literally the worst and grossest case. It's rape, incest, drugging, murder, rape of children, child killings, kidnapping, dismemberment of a child. I'm so sorry. Domestic violence and abuse. Kind of in that order. So, if it helps, we're past the incest for the most part. I only mention it one other time for you guys. So
now the rest of us aren't past it. We're still thinking about it.
We're just at the regular child death now. I'm sorry. So if you guys remember, we had ended when Carla and Paul dismembered 14-year-old Leslie Mahaffey and encased her body in cement and threw her into a nearby lake. Like I said, they eventually found her, one of the body parts washed up, you know, the orthodontic piece was in it and it was identified as her, but it wasn't linked to the Ken and Barbie killers who have not.
I hate that.
I know.
I'm going to look them up.
Yeah, it's very 80s attractive couple, if it makes any difference to you. That should be prefaced because they both have stupid hair. What are your thoughts?
They were in an episode of Murder Made Me Famous. Did you know that?
Not surprising. Are you ready for the gross thing? I want to tell you later, but I'm afraid you're going to see it right now if you keep looking.
There was nothing behind those eyes.
No, cold, dead, and heartless. Anyway, I don't want you to see it before I get to the news, but there's a movie about them, right? And guess who stars in it? You're not going to guess.
It's not Zac Efron.
It's not.
Who played that musical?
Do you want to know the girl or the guy?
You can tell me the girl because I have a theory for the guy.
The girl is Donna from That 70s Show.
Oh, shit. Interesting.
Yeah. Laura. I don't know how to say her last name, so I'm not going to say it. You guys all know who I was talking about when I said Donna. So Em has a theory. Who is the theory guy that we have?
Ben Platt.
Hilarious, but no.
Vaguely look alike.
Misha Collins.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, is that not so weird?
Very weird.
Anyway, so they're Carla and Paul. But the whole movie, and this is what pisses me off because we're going to get to it, but like the whole movie paints her as like a victim kind of deal. But then at the end, I think, I haven't seen it, but from what I've read about it.
Like that's what they tried to do with like Myra Henry is like.
I don't like it.
Like, no, she was just as to blame, if not more to blame.
I definitely feel like Carla was definitely responsible for the murder aspect of everything in this. So, you know. Anyway, I digress. So the couple began trolling for victims during, quote, after school hours because they're disgusting and literally looking for children, in case any of you forgot. Em has a very disgusted look on their face.
It's because it's gross. For the benefit of the radio.
For the benefit. For your listening pleasure. So the streets were fairly empty when they were trolling recently, and it wasn't until they cruised past a Catholic school and saw a child briskly walking home that they were like, oh. So they cut across a parking lot, and Carla jumped out really quick and pulled a map with her and pretended to look like she needed help or whatever. And the girl, because Carla was a woman, approached because that's what, whatever, anyway. So it was a teenage girl by the name of Kristen French. She was a 15-year-old Canadian, and she looked at the map while Paul attacked her from behind, brandishing a knife and forcing her into the front seat of the car. which I think is a disgustingly successful tactic of kidnappers.
Right.
Like having your person in the front and then also having, like, because Carla obviously moved to the back. So, like.
Right. So that you have them from both angles.
Like, girl, you're surrounded. Shit, homie. And it's also important to note that at no point, unlike Leslie, was Kristen blindfolded.
Oh, so they intended to kill her.
Yeah. So it seems like when they picked Kristen up, the intention was to either A, never let her leave, or B,
to never let her leave.
Yeah. So, you know, if you catch both drifts, you know that neither option was great. Like I said, Carla helped with the abduction of Kristen. They took her into the front seat. They're surrounding her. Unfortunately for these two absolute idiots, Kristen took the same route home every single day, so her family knew how long it would take until she would get home. So when it had been longer than 15 minutes, they were like, foul play has happened. And they called the police, and the police were like, a white girl? No! And so they, I'm sorry, I shouldn't jest, but it was worth it. So they knew something was wrong, and the police assembled a wicked quick, like, search party, and they searched her route. So, and several witnesses actually came forward about the abduction, which kind of is like, what do you mean they saw police? And you're like, oh yeah, I did happen to see that. But you didn't see it and then call the police. You waited right. until, like, get the whatever. Anyway, they found Kristen's shoe chilling in the parking lot that she was abducted from, which told them about the seriousness of the situation.
And how quickly she was taken.
No kidding, right? Like, how quick do you have to snatch a kid for their shoe to fall off? I don't know the statistics of that, but I feel like pretty quick.
That'd be really a lot of velocity behind that.
Yeah, and also, like, how bold do you have to be to do a child napping in broad ass daylight?
And after school when there's obviously going to be a lot of people around.
And not even just people, dude, but like parents, attentive, watching their surroundings.
Right.
So Carla and Paul film themselves raping Kristen over Easter weekend, in case you were wondering what was going on. Like they had with Leslie, they forced her to submit to Paul, but they also forced her to submit to Carla. And there's, you know, videotapes of all of this, and it shows that like Carla's gotten progressively more and more and more involved.
Yeah. That's good. But yeah, she was just a victim.
Yes, positive. They also forced Kristen to consume large amounts of alcohol. But like I said earlier, it seemed like they were pretty intentional on, you know, murdering Kristen from the start because they never blindfolded her, which is a change.
Right.
So to the surprise of no one, unfortunately, they did murder Kristen. They did it right before they went over to Carla's family's house for Easter dinner. I don't like that there's so much family stuff going on right after they kill people. If they're like, this is what I need to cope.
Well, like, they're obviously also really weird about family considering, like, their first victim, you know?
True. You know, that's not a bad point. So Carla said Paul strangled Kristen for 7 minutes. Paul said Carla beat Kristen with a rubber mallet because she tried to escape, and Kristen was strangled with a noose around her neck, which was secured to a Hope chest. And then that Carla then went to go fix her hair. And I'm not saying that one of those sounds more believable than the other story, but one of those sounded more believable. And it's Paul's account, because I do believe that Carla's crazy.
Yeah,
so that was what was important. She went and fixed her hair after that. She was like, oh no, I have to go see my family now. My remaining sister.
Remaining family that I didn't murder.
Right. Thank God Paul didn't decide he was attracted to her little sister, Lori.
Right. Jesus.
So Kristen French's body was discovered in April of 1992. She was naked with her hair cut, and she was found in a roadside ditch. Carla later said that they cut her hair to make her harder to identify, not to keep as a trophy. But like, low key, I don't know, because why did you bring it up?
Right. Like, no one asked.
Like, she was like, by the way, it wasn't for, like, a trophy. Like, we did it so she wouldn't be identified. Oh, okay. Well, now I think it was for the other thing.
Yeah, it totally makes it better.
So, I didn't mention it earlier, but when Paul and Carla had first started dating, Paul pretty quickly became abusive with Carla. And that's where a lot of her painting of her being a victim stems, with the fact that she had long, like, abuse throughout their relationship. I'm not excusing any abuse that Carla suffered, obviously, but she's a terrible human. Well, one of these times when Paul began hitting Carla, he started beating her with a metal flashlight, and she ended up going to the hospital. She lies while she's there and says she was in a car accident, but a ton of people are sus, and apparently she's, like, tricked enough humans into, like, believing she's
a victim,
that they were like, oh, you poor thing, we're gonna come help you, and her coworkers physically removed her from the house. But she does file a battered spouse thing, and apparently this is around the time Paul writes a suicide note, but a friend intervened, which is why there is no warning. So there is also some heat that starts getting applied to Paul because the police were pretty sure they had found the Scarborough rapist in him. And they actually even pulled Carla in to talk to them. But because she is Carla, the entire time she was in there, she talked about her abuse the entire time. She was like, he hits me. And they were like, we know it's him. They didn't say this to her, but they did know it was him because they had the DNA matched. But they just listened to her talk about how she was an abused wife and that she was laying the groundwork for what was about to come. This feels important to remember because, like I said earlier, Carla has pretty privilege. She's blonde, she's pretty, and she's fairly charismatic with the people that she meets, even though
she has absolutely nothing behind her eyes.
I know. I was like, even though, as M points out, that it ain't got nothing there. Just TV literally static.
Nothing.
No thoughts, only crime. So, yeah. But this was, you know, one of the ways she was able to gain sympathy from people and make them feel bad for her and convince them that she was a victim to Paul instead of an active
It's like, not saying she wasn't a victim to Paul, but also that's not an excuse to go off and rape and murder people.
Yeah, like, so that night Carla confessed to a family member after she got back from the police department. It was an uncle, I believe, that Paul had abused her and that he was the rapist that the police were looking for. And they're like, oh my God, why didn't you tell them that? And she was like, listen. So as well as that being a thing, what she says is that she was also forced to participate in some of his crimes, namely the murders of Mahaffey and French. And naturally, her family was horrified, but they encouraged her to go to the police and turn herself and Paul in because they were like, that's nuts and above my pay grade. I don't want to deal with it. Go talk to someone else.
Right.
That's a very reasonable response. So, like I said, she goes in and she tells them all about Paul's crimes, managing also to include ones that he boasted to her about before they even met. Like crimes he committed before they met, I mean. And it was before they knew each other at all. And so she's like telling all of these crimes. She's like, this is everything he's done. And they're like, wow, your testimony is valuable.
Right.
Which is frustrating.
Yeah. I don't like that.
Yeah. This is around the time they got the NRP to reopen Tammy Homolka's case because they were like, that's sus. And I'm assuming Carla was fairly forthcoming with what happened, although she downplayed her involvement, like I said.
Right.
Carla also began seeking immunity with a lawyer, but it was for her cooperation, you know, and she was actually placed under 24-hour surveillance, but they didn't end up giving her immunity because they figured out some of her involvement a little quicker than that. And they were like, no, like, not like figured out, but like she confessed to enough involvement that they were like, we can't give you immunity for what you've done.
Right. So, you were an active participant.
Right. Like forced or not, like it ain't like that, sis. So their home was searched and Paul's lawyer, and this is kind of like a weird, like, apparently managed to wander in and take some 100 odd videotapes, which were the recorded crimes that Paul and Carla did, that they had kept hidden behind a light fixture. And he managed to keep them all hidden for about 17 months into the trial, which is how they were able to, this is what I don't understand. It's Paul's lawyer. But what he ends up doing is actually just benefiting Carla because she's able to spin the story because these tapes don't exist. And I'm like, you helped the wrong person.
Right.
But he did leave one tape which showed, trigger warning, Carla performing oral sex on the 14-year-old Jane Doe. Ew. So, yeah. The evidence of the tape did take full immunity off the table for Carla, obviously, as well as her other involvement in the crime, but they have that for sure. During the trial, Carla managed to show herself as a victim of Paul the entire time, that she was unwilling and abused, simply used in his crimes, an accessory, but not, like, content to be there. She also managed to divorce him during these proceedings in, like, 93 or 94, which most people think was kind of just a move because they're like, see, look, her first right. out, she took it. Jurors were convinced that she was a victim, and in 1993, they gave her a plea bargain. It was a way to successfully lock up Bernardo, and Carla was sentenced to 12 years in prison, eligible for parole after 3 years of good behavior, and she had 1 week to decide if she would take it, and if she said no, she would be charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of second-degree murder, as well as...
So, people who, like, kill the person raping them get longer times than that, and they're, like, actual victims, but all right.
So, this deal is known as the deal with the devil, which is true. It's also known as the worst plea deal in Canadian history, because
I agree.
She's actually terrible. So the deal was unfortunately made before the tapes were discovered, and the extent of her involvement was no longer just he said, she said.
Right. And seems like that was orchestrated.
Yeah, right. Like, they couldn't unaccept the deal, which
right.
I think is not really fair. So Paul Bernardo was convicted on nearly 30 counts of rape and only 2 counts of murder, which resulted in a life sentence on September 1st, 1995. He cited on more than one occasion how he never wanted to murder the girls and that his wife was the real killer, which I believe. Bernardo's lawyer, not that that made him better, like Em said earlier, like that's important to note as well.
Right, like a pick your poison, murder or rape. Like,
why do we always come back to that?
Yeah.
We're always like, I mean... Bernardo's lawyer kept the tapes hidden for 17 months, like I said, and this was considered crucial evidence because it would have stopped prosecutors from making the deal, which is something they literally said. And the lawyer was acquitted on obstruction of justice, but he faced disciplinary hearing. But it's really Ken Murray's fault that Carla Homolka is walking the streets currently as a free human.
Love that. Love that.
So like I said, Paul was convicted on 2 first-degree murder counts and 2 aggravated sexual assaults. Not sure why only 2, though, since there were so many. And sentenced to life without parole, at least 25 years. He was deemed a dangerous offender, which means he'll probably never be released, despite his parole attempts. Good. But like Carla, he was just as bad. And, you know, like...
No, they both deserve to just rot in jail.
Like, I'm saying, it was... Her fucking sister, dude. Like, she should be in jail. Anyway, in February of 2018, he was denied parole.
Good.
He was also attacked, or he has also been attacked a lot in prison, despite the fact that they've tried to keep him segregated from other inmates as much as possible. But let me tell you, prisoners find a way when it comes to kid killers.
Yeah.
There's a rule, and they found a way. One time, even having to be stopped with tear gas to, like, get them off of him.
Good for them.
I know. I was like, that should be congratulated. They should have, like, 1 year knocked off their sentence for every child murderer.
Right.
Your incentive, sir. So here's the real bummer portion of the story. Like I said earlier, Carla is out of jail. She was released in 2005, despite public outrage, which has continued since her sentence was announced, since it's been considered way too short. When she was released, she settled in Quebec. And she married the brother of her lawyer, which I kind of think is, like, karmic justice. Like, it's funny because, like, you defended her. Like, you were so insistent she only get this long, like, because you think she's such a good person, right? Well, now she's part of your family. How do you like them apples?
Right. Like, Jesus Christ.
I just think that's really enjoyable. So, you know, she's out. She's part of her family. And she had 3 kids with the lawyer's brother. And I was like, that's a lot of karma that's been swung your way.
Convicted fucking.
I was like, also, I feel like the brother should be sat down. I've been like, honey.
Like, are you good?
Because, like, I didn't mention this, but one thing that, like, Morbid had covered is the fact that, like, on these tapes, Carly even said that she couldn't wait to have kids with Paul so that he could rape and assault them, too. So she wasn't...
So let's let her out of prison and allow her to get married and have kids.
And to be, oh, you'll love, guess what she does now for a job?
What?
She volunteers with school children.
Oh, that's exactly, that's a safe place.
Because she's allowed there. That's just fine. So like I said, she has been getting reamed by the community. It's been incredible because of Facebook pages, which are still active, that says, we're watching Carla Homolka in an effort to track where she is because they don't like that she's free at all.
No, she shouldn't be.
Yeah, it's disgusting that she's just allowed to walk the streets. She changed her name to Leanne Thiel, and but it was with Paul. Like, Paul also changed his last name to that. So it's not even like she can be like, oh, I liked it. Like, you're still doing shit with Paul despite being divorced. Whatever. She briefly
and trying moved. To say that you were his victim.
Right, but like you still
instead of his equal. Right.
Ugh, hate it. She briefly moved out of the country and changed her name to Leanne Bordelais, which was her new husband's last name. But since 2014, she's been in Canada spending time with her children and volunteering with her children's field trips, which
imagine
is disgusting.
Having to grow up knowing that was your mother.
Dude, imagine having to look back at pictures and be like, Mom, who's that on our field trip? And be like, oh, that was the local neighborhood rapist, Carla Homolka. She was allowed on your field trips because her kid was in your class.
Right.
No, Jesus I would Christ. Not be okay if I had to like wake up in the morning and be like, oh, good, my mom's a convicted rapist.
And said all of that stuff on tape.
And a murderer.
Okay. Right.
But go off, sis. You can take care of children. Anyway, like I said, she's a pedophile and a child rapist. So later, a few days before Carla's release, Paul actually talked about how he always intended to free his victims, but when the blindfold slipped, Carla was worried, and so she said she was going to inject air into Leslie's bloodstream to trigger an air embolism.
Jesus Christ.
And I just, that's kind of weird because her thing has always been poisoning, so I don't know necessarily about that, but I just think that's really weird and uncomfortable that that's... Bernardo scored 35 out of 40 points on the psychopathy checklist. Apparently, Carla only scored 5 out of 40, but I fully believe it's because she's really manipulative, and I just think Paul is too stupid to change his answers.
Right. Like, he's just going to answer with the first thing that comes to mind, and she's going to take a beat.
And she's going to be like, that's going to make me sound the least crazy. Like,
right.
Yeah. So, Paul's next parole hearing took place on the 22nd of June in 2021.
Oh, that was just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I was like, that was basically last week. It took only 1 hour of deliberation before the presiding judge turned him down. Good. And in 2001, Elm Street published an article saying that it was proven Tammy's death was not an accident and that Carla had administered an overdose of halcyon and halothane on purpose. They claim she was a malignant narcissist who was so angry over her fiance's love for Tammy that she had to remove her from Paul permanently. And of course, like I said earlier, their story has influenced plenty of art in the media, including the movie with Laura and Misha, but I haven't watched it. I just mean the premises. Like I said, she is denied parole apparently at the end, which is not true to history, but good, but it seems like the whole thing is very one-sided. But it's called Carla, and it is free on YouTube if anyone has an hour and 45 minutes of free time.
Fantastic.
Yeah, but that is actually all that I have to bring to the table today for our double episode two-parter of Carla and Paul.
Fantastic. I'm glad that's over.
Yeah, I am so sorry, everyone, because that was horrible.
Yeah, we understand.
All right, you got anything else for him?
Nope, that was it. So as always, you guys can follow our Instagram to see pictures.
At Under the Influence of True Crime.
You can join our Facebook page.
At Under the Influence of True Crime.
You can follow our Twitter.
At Under True Crime.
You can send us an email.
At Under the Influence of True Crime. @gmail.com.
You can also rate, review, and subscribe.
literally anywhere you listen to your podcasts, and we love and appreciate everyone who does it.
And you can also join us right back here next week for some more
spooky tales. We'll see what I
not choose. To I'm I would like to make it clear, just in case you do leave it in.